you see certain things begin or certain things set in certain places and you expect the narrative to have a certain tone. But I think what's really happening, the trauma within, the emotional trauma that these characters are dealing with, the emotional violence.
Academy Award-winning director of Moonlight, Barry Jenkins. He's just one of the master filmmakers we'll hear from today on this special 100th edition of The Cinema Show. Over the past 2 years, we've been fortunate enough to speak to some of the most talented directors of our generation. Today, we'll count down our list of 100 great films, with contributions from Xavier Dolan, Nicholas Winding Refn, and Kelly Reichardt, among others.
The idea was, how do I bring Baldwin back to a younger audience today? Because over the years, I've seen how Baldwin have been disappearing.
Very often, the films that deal with ghosts or haunted houses are intended just to scare us.
What matters in making movies is all the elements are working and walking at once in synchronicity.
That's all to come on this special 100th edition of The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. Hello from Midori House in London and welcome to The Cinema Show. I'm Ben Rylan. 100 episodes, 100 great films. That's the focus of today's special episode. Over the next 30 minutes, we'll count down 100 of our favourite films, in no particular order, and we'll hear from some of the most talented filmmakers working today. From 2017's winner of the Oscar for Best Picture, Barry Jenkins, to our most popular interview over the past 2 years, Xavier Dolan. Let's start things off now with our countdown of 100 great movies.
The Wizard of Oz, Psycho, Gone with the Wind, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, All About Eve, The Godfather, Superman the Movie, Sunset Boulevard, Casablanca, Clueless, Manhattan, Carol, The Dark Knight, Too Late for Tears, King Kong, Sleeping Beauty, The Third Man, Mrs. Doubtfire, Ordinary People. Moonlight, director Barry Jenkins.
I knew, maybe I should say I decided, that there was no way for this film to speak to everything about the experience of being gay or being gay and black or being black. You know, it just wasn't going to reach totality of any one of those experiences. And when I say that I felt a freedom, it was because Terrell Alvin McCraney's life and the life of this character, Chiron, were so alike mine. So just like my experience of growing up in the same place at the same time with a mom going through the same ordeal and with crack cocaine addiction, I could draw from personal experience. You know, the barometer for it, is this right or is that right? You know, I just knew what was appropriate because I had lived many of those things. And I often feel like, you know, because the piece originated not necessarily on the stage, but from the mind of a playwright, there was some visual work or visual freedom that existed within the piece. I got into filmmaking because the possibility of how metaphor could be carried through sound and imagery. And in reading this piece, which was so rich with words, with dialogue, I just saw, again, just an amazing opportunity, the freedom to take this one piece of art that was very at home in one form and just really run with it and see how it could be sort of necessarily embellished, but how it could be transmuted into a totally different form, carrying the same energy, the same themes, the same power, to be honest, but in a different medium. You know, I wrote the first draft in 10 days, man. It was just such a fluid experience.
one of the things that it does so well is that it takes us into this world and allows us to meet these characters in a way that so few films manage to do with such authentic fashion. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the real-life world that Moonlight takes place within, because as I understand it, it was, of course, based on the real neighbourhood that both you and the writer Terrell McCraney actually grew up in. I'll be honest, all the way through the film, I actually kept expecting something terrible to happen. I just always was anticipating this sense that something violent or confronting was going to take place in the film. And I was thinking about that to myself as I left the screening and thought perhaps the reason I kept expecting that was that I've seen a number of films that seem to take place in similar sorts of settings, and maybe I'd been conditioned to expect certain things from those stories. So, I mean, this is a poor, fairly rough American neighbourhood. But your story is a remarkably gentle story. It's all about sensitive people with feelings. And I came away thinking a key part of the film's resonance comes from the fact that we're presented with these characters who feel so real. Do you feel as though the success of Moonlight perhaps also says something about the wider public's attitude and understanding of this side of America?
I'll talk about just globally. You know, I traveled quite a bit. I spent a lot of time in London with this film. Shout out to Altitude Films. And a lot of time all across Europe, to be honest. One of the best experiences I ever had with this movie was in Berlin, and just how people were willing to cross the distance, the cultural difference, and see themselves in the character. I love that you point out that the movie does take place in this environment where, you know, again, film is a visual medium. There are visual cues. You see certain things begin or certain things set in certain places, and you expect the narrative to have a certain tone, the narrative to progress in a certain way. But I think what's really happening, and this is something that Terrell and I talked about, was the trauma within, the emotional trauma that these characters are dealing with, the emotional violence that a kid like Chiron is forced to endure over the course of time, and how that informs the outward appearance of the character, the outward projection of a character's character. I think it is a quite a violent film, but the violence exists on a totally different wavelength than the audience is expecting because of what they associate with certain types of imagery. You know, this is a kid who's roiling beneath the surface over the course of the film, and yet there are very few physically violent outbursts, and the central violent outburst actually is perpetrated by our sweet, sweet main character. So, yeah, it wasn't this thing where we were trying to subvert expectations or counter people's expectations. It was just a fidelity to the life that we lived.
Barry Jenkins, director of Moonlight, and the winner of the Academy Award for Best Picture in 2017.
Thanks for tuning into the 100th edition of The Cinema Show, brought to you by MUBI, where director Nicholas Winding Refn is currently screening a special selection of films. MUBI is the curated movie site of cult, classic, and award-winning films. Sample a month of movies for free by heading to mubi.com/monaco. That's MUBI/monaco.
In a moment, we'll hear from the director of Meek's Cut Off, Kelly Reichardt. But first, more from our list of 100 great films.
Batman Returns, Mata Hari, Citizen Kane, Network, The Manchurian Candidate, Sunrise, A Tale of Two Humans, Rebel Without a Cause, Some Like It Hot, The Apartment, Her, Knights of Cabiria, Muriel's Wedding, Suddenly Last Summer, Vertigo. Meek's Cut Off, director Kelly Reichardt.
Those themes are translated into these different little worlds, like the world of communal living and night moves, or, you know, which is about community in a sense. And then Meek's Cut Off, which is a Western from 1845, where you're traveling in a community. And Wendy and Lucy is about, you know, the community in a different sense of, they all kind of ask a question of our relation to each other and responsibility to a stranger. The last film I made was from a collection of stories by Montana writer Miley Malloy. So it's been very great thing for me to find writers that are letting me get to, I think, like letting the films have a richness that I don't think I could get to on my own. You know, I think finding good writers to work with has been another thing that just makes the filmmaking better from my end of things. Yeah.
So that seems to be a bit of a running theme through a lot of your films, that sense of really not recognizing the place that you're supposed to call home. Is that something you yourself have perhaps felt, or maybe you feel now sometimes when you look at the current state of American society?
I mean, I don't know that I think about it in those terms. I will say that I don't really have necessarily, like many people I know, you know, they were raised in the East and they ultimately go back East, you know, live in Massachusetts or New York or Rhode Island, or people in California seem to migrate back to the West Coast or in Oregon. You know, people have a sense of like where they're from. And Florida is such an odd place. It's not considered the South. It's always been this sort of weird appendage to the rest of the country. And having no desire to go back to Florida, you know, I really have, as an adult, tried to figure out where exactly this feeling of home is, and whether that's a place or really if that's something that comes from inside you. That is a sort of endless sort of search. And I guess that is familiar. You know, the thing that ends up happening in films is, you know, after you've made a few of them and you go like, oh, you know, there's that again. And a lot of these films end up, the main parts end up being where people getting from point A to point B and back again. But, you know, I guess my feeling driving back and forth across the country is really just one, which I've done since I was a kid, I guess, is just this feeling of that we just settled for so much crap. You know, I wish we could have had more of an imagination. It just feels like something was given into that wasn't great for the spirit in any way, as you just encounter all the endless big box stores of the world and the chains that take you from one end of the country to the other.
That was Kelly Reichardt speaking to us back in March. You're listening to a special edition of The Cinema Show on Monocle 24, celebrating our 100th episode with 100 great movies.
Leaning, safe and secure from all alarms.
The Night of the Hunter, Solaris, Wild Strawberries, Touch of Evil, To Catch a Thief, Stella Dallas, All That Heaven Allows, Y Tu Mamá También, Tokyo Story.
Leaning on the everlasting arms.
I Killed My Mother, director Javier Dolan.
I already have an opinion on my films when I stream them, when they premiere. I mean, of course, I've been doing the color timing, I've been doing the whole post-production for months, so I already have an opinion on those films. Do I like them? Am I proud of them? What am I less proud of? What did I fail? What did I do right? What did I do wrong? I already have an opinion. But, well, you know, you make mistakes. You identify them as mistakes, whether on set already or in the editing room, and you try to not repeat those mistakes over and over again. I just think that what matters in making movies is that the movie you are watching, all the elements are working and walking at once in synchronicity. All the elements are aligned and none are peaking or standing out in a distracting way. The acting of one, or the music here, or the effects there, or the sets, or the costumes, or whichever effect of camera is not distracting from the story. So this is why It's Only the End of the World is my favorite one. And of course, the reaction of people is everything. It will always affect me. It doesn't affect my vision of the film and what I think of the film, but it does affect me. You know, if it's negative or aggressive or cruel or crude. Of course, I'm a human being. I can't evolve in this world if I am not sensitive to what people say about my work and how they look at it and what they feel when they see it. It's everything. The goal for me really is to work with artists and actors that I respect more than in places that I dream to be working in. I have no dreams of Hollywood or no dreams of France. Of course, there are businesses and industries that produce an overwhelming amount of good filmmaking, and that's great. But it's more about the people you work with than the places you end up in.
Xavier Dolan speaking to us shortly after his 2016 film, It's Only the End of the World, screened at the Cannes Film Festival. As with all of his films, it left critics divided, but it also took away the Grand Prix prize. Now, a few more titles from our very own Top 100.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified, kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how to get along. So now you're back from outer space.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Toy Story, The Women, Birth, The Shop Around the Corner, An Affair to Remember, Milk, Breakfast at Tiffany's, Advise and Consent, Gaslight, A Single Man, Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, Imitation of Life, Don't Look Now. I Am Not Your Negro, director Raoul Peck.
At the start of the project, I gave myself a certain number of rules. The idea was, how do I bring Baldwin back to a younger audience today? Because over the years, I've seen how Baldwin have been disappearing, and a lot of people don't even know who James Baldwin was. So the project was, from the start, you know, how can I have Baldwin play the same role he played in my life? Meaning, you know, help me structure my thoughts, help me understanding who I was and what the world around me was and how to deconstruct that world and find my own story and my own narrative. So I had to find a way artistically, cinematically, to bring those words and only those words without any talking heads, without any scholar explaining who Baldwin was. And by the way, it wasn't supposed to be a biography. It was really about the words.
I'll tell you a story, if I may. Many years ago, when I first came to London, I was in the British Museum, naturally. And one of the West Indians who worked there struck up a conversation with me and wanted to know where I was from. And I told him I was from Harlem. And that answer didn't satisfy him. And I didn't understand what he meant. I was born in Harlem. I was born in Harlem Hospital, I said. I was born in New York. None of these answers satisfied him. He said, where was your mother born? And I said, she was born in Maryland. And I could see, though I didn't understand it, that he was going more and more disgusted with me. He was so became more and more impatient. And where was your father born? My father was born in New Orleans. Yes, he said, but man, where were you born? And I began to get it. No, I said, well, I said, my mother was born in Maryland, my father was born in New Orleans, I was born in New York. He said, but before that, where were you born? And I had to say, I don't know. I could see that he did not believe me. And I tried to explain, you know, there's no way for me. He said, don't you care enough to find out? And I tried to explain that if I were originally from Dakar or from wherever I was in Africa, I couldn't find out where it was because my entry into America is a bill of sale.
It had to be pure Baldwin, and at the same time, it had to be a complete work in itself.
But there are so many other people, such as James Baldwin, that are also part of this story. And I know in the film you reference people like Eartha Kitt. So many people stood out for their own specific reasons. For you personally, because I know you just mentioned there that Baldwin had an impact on you, he was important to you. What was it about Baldwin that stands out? He obviously has a way with words, but there's
there's something else about him, isn't it? When he talks, when he animates, there's something very different about him.
Don't forget, Baldwin at his core is really an incredible humanist and a philosopher, a poet. He's somebody, you know, for which bodies and soul are important. So the way he engages with you is always in a very direct, sincere, and loving way. And he has been not only the good friend of many of those people fighting in the civil rights, but he has also been the mentor for a whole generation. You know, people like Nina Simone, people like Maya Angelou, people even like Toni Morrison later on. You know, he was really the elder. He was somebody you could rely on.
Raoul Peck, director of the Academy Award-nominated documentary I Am Not Your Negro, which features a narration made up entirely of the words of James Baldwin. And we can expect more Baldwin at the cinemas very soon, with Moonlight director Barry Jenkins currently at work on an adaptation of his 1974 book, If Beale Street Could Talk. Still to come on this special 100th edition of The Cinema Show, the director of Drive and The Neon Demon, Nicholas Winding Refn. But first, a few more films from our list.
In the Mood for Love, His Girl Friday, Spotlight, Amelie, The Great Beauty, Laura, Top Hat, Sleepless in Seattle, Bad Education, The Silence of the Lambs, The Hours, Rosemary's Baby, The Lion King, Thelma and Louise.
是我。如果有多張船飛,你會不會同我一起走?
A Ghost Story, director David Lowry.
As human beings, we remember things wrong all the time. We have a very subjective take on history and our own personal timelines. Even in talking about this movie, you know, the personal aspects of it, such as the argument that Casey and Rooney have, that's based on something that an argument my wife and I had. And my wife and I both have different versions of that argument. Like, if you were to sit her down and ask her about it, she would give her perspective on it, and it would be a perspective on the same event, but my perspective on it is very different. And we've realized that over the course of promoting this film and talking about, you know, the autobiographical nature of it. The autobiography in the movie is very subjective, and it is my version of how I remember things, and is very different from hers, even though she was just as much a part of it as I was. So that's definitely all plays into it. That's all part of it. But I also don't ever consciously try to exploit those ideas or those themes. They just sort of rear their head in spite of what I'm doing.
Your film doesn't really ask people to believe in ghosts. It doesn't ask people to suspend some sort of element of disbelief in order to enjoy the film. It simply tells a story from the perspective of someone who may or may not be an actual real thing. From your perspective, why do people believe in ghosts?
It's a very comforting thought. I mean, it is a way to hang on to those around us who we've lost. You know, the idea that someone we love who we've lost might still be hanging around is comforting to us. At the same time, it's also comforting to think that we might not have to leave, that we might, you know, after we're gone, we might be able to stick around ourselves and partake in the world that we understand. So it's a way to both hang on to things and to envision a world in which we might persevere past our own point of expiration. And that's a very comforting concept.
David Lowry's film, A Ghost Story, was one of the strangest experiences we've seen at the cinema, and an enormously powerful one too. It's little wonder it became one of the most talked about films of 2017. Now the final countdown in our list of 100 great films.
Picnic at Hanging Rock, The Birdcage, Lassie, The Innocents, Frances Ha, In a Lonely Place, A Streetcar Named Desire, Dr. No, The Birds, Weekend, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Blow Up, Boogie Nights, Scream, Edward Scissorhands, RoboCop, American Beauty, Donnie Darko, Lost in Translation, Spirited Away, Black Swan, Kill Bill, Birdman, Pretty Woman. Drive, director Nicholas Windig Refn.
I think that any interpretation of what I do is always right in the perspective it comes from. I don't make political films. I don't make films with a certain agenda other than I like the act of creativity. And my films are all the things that's inside of me, whether good or bad. We all know that there's feminine and masculinity inside of us, and part man, part woman. I think that there's a 16-year-old girl inside of every man. And I really wanted to embrace my fantasy of what it must be like and everything that comes with that. Everything I do comes from a very fetishized approach. You know, it's all fantasy for me. And it feels great when I make it. But I thought doing a teenage horror movie about a 16-year-old girl was a way to entertain my own idea of what it must be like to have been born beautiful. Art essentially is best when it's just an expression of all or everything inside of one. You know, it's a singularity is essentially what makes it an experience. And it goes beyond good or bad. You know, that's irrelevant. It's about the experience, which is the essence of creativity.
Nicholas Winding Refn speaking to us during the release of his 2016 film, The Neon Demon. He reportedly turned down the opportunity to direct the 2015 James Bond film, Spectre. He's currently working on his next film, a Tokyo-set spy thriller, The Avenging Silence. That brings us to the end of this special 100th edition of The Cinema Show. Thanks for tuning in over the past 2 years. Next week, we're focusing on the art of illustration. We'll pay a visit to Brazil's leading animation studio, the Turma de Monica, for a chat with the man in charge of it all, Mauricio de Souza.
Tudo que nós fizemos, tudo que você está vendo aqui.
Everything was born out of ideas I had at the start of my career. Since then, I've looked at the characters like children, and my wife is director of the studio, so she understands the philosophy as well as I do.
Today's show was edited and mixed by Christy Evans and researched by Yolene Goffin. Thanks for tuning in to this special 100th episode of The Cinema Show. I'm Ben Rylan. Bye for now.
Dai cavalli a dondolo.